Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our guests today on Commodity Week include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Commodity Week. Ellen Dearden, let's start with you this afternoon with the list of items we should discuss for the day. What do you have for us?
I think the most important thing to be talking about is what really is the U.S. planting pace. And, you know, there's going to be replant going on, and the market's going to kind of look at that. And right now it doesn't feel that that's a major problem. But as we get to the middle of this month, it will be on, you know, certain areas that haven't been able to get into the field or get back into the field. So I would say this Monday crop update probably won't matter a whole lot, but the second one on the 15th, 2 weeks down the road, is going to be pretty darn important. So we may have to weather kind of some choppy stuff till we get to that point, and then throw into the mix next Wednesday's crop production report.
Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think the biggest thing for us is figuring out where the next step is for new crop corn sales and what type of opportunities can the producer look for as the market potentially deals with uncertainty in the weather segment here in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
And Dan Zwicker.
I guess my question is how big of production prospects drop from what the trade has been working do we need to get any kind of measurable bounce in the markets?
Let's start there. So we're going to start with the acreage and where we are. Just a quick reminder that when the USDA releases the weekly crop progress report, it is a survey mostly of producers, and they simply call and ask, have you completed your corn planting or how far along you are? And so each and every Monday, the number of acres it represents changes. So this week it might be 500 acres of corn when they call you and you say, I'm not complete, but you might be there at 420 when you get the call next week and you've changed your mind or you delayed planting enough and you moved an 80 acres into soybeans and you say, yep, I'm complete. So that's how those numbers are collected. So just be aware as the numbers come out, you may see some numbers that say they're complete. They're not based off of the 90 million acres. They're based off of what farmers actually expect to plant, though they don't get a series of numbers from them. So how far do you think, Dan, that production would have to drop in acreage, I suppose, or maybe you would prefer to put it in bushels in order actually to put a bull into the marketplace?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's why I ask it. and like I mentioned in on the Thursday afternoon market closing report, it's always that last 5% of the acres or the last 4% of the acres that don't get planted. It's not the 95% don't get planted. You know, we always get 95% planted, roughly. You know, being a market analyst, I don't like to use the word always and never and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's going to be, if we have continued problems getting this crop in the ground, it's that last 5%, let's say, just to make math simple, and 5% of the 90 million acres of corn or 90 million acres of soybeans, whatever number you want to use, that's 4.5 million acres apiece. Now, let's say you lose the 2.5%. Well, then you're talking about 2 million acres less of corn, maybe 2 million acres less of beans. The question is, were the March numbers correct? were they too low to start with? Sometimes they are. But when you get into late springs, like we're kind of into right now, where extreme wetness, where bottom ground, creek bottom ground, river bottom ground, all the low-lying areas may end up as failed acres. And what percentage of that 90 million are in that bottom ground category or lowland category, I don't know. But I'd say if we would see a 2 million acre drop in both corn and soybean acres, I think that in and by itself would begin to at least start down the progress of changing the overall balance sheet. And then, of course, if you have delayed plantings, you know, on into May or something, then you could begin to talk about maybe something less than a trend line yield because the crop is not getting off to a real good start. The heavy rain is definitely going to take some nitrogen with it, fertilizer practices and whatnot. So, but like Ellen mentioned earlier, it's, you know, May 15th or May 20th. I'm kind of a May 20th guy. You know, if we come in here May 20th and only 75% of the crop is planted, then you begin to say, yeah, there's a real risk that we're going to lose that last 5% of the acres for one reason or the other. And then there's a real risk that we could have a less than trend line type yield. So I guess that's what I would say to begin to change the complexion of the supply demand table.
Are there any similar years, do you think, Brian Stark, to this one? And I guess I'm thinking back, and there might be some in Iowa. Folks will remember 1993, but that was a summertime flood. So while the stages on the Mississippi River are really up and at those record-breaking levels, it's a different time of year completely. And do we have something that we can compare it to, or any indication of whether this really will change very much the acreage mix, in your opinion?
Yeah, my memory isn't the greatest, but I want to remember and say that even in 2012, yet I bring that year up, we had a really wet spring and there was some delay in planting. And obviously we know how the rest of that crop year went, and by no means am I saying that that's going to materialize this year, but we generally, in experience in past, it's hard to quantify, you know, delayed planting and how long that's going to be sustained. I think the market, as Dan alluded to today, is skeptical. And I think that's because the world is flush with big supplies. You have a South American crop that is continuing to grow, or has grown to a large size on both soybeans and corn. And so even if there is some issues in the United States, the market is very reluctant to want to press it. I look at today's trade action and, you know, wheat being down almost to the point of where it was before all of the snow fell this past weekend on it. So the market in itself just doesn't act like there's any urgency around concern yet. And I think those dates of whether it's May 15th or May 20th are critical components to maybe turning the complexion to get into a potential seasonal rally. But it was about this time last year when we ran into some concerns in late May moving forward, whether it be too wet or too dry, that we had our little 3 to 4 week run up in June or into the middle of June with futures. And I think that's what we've tried to look at this as, is saying the market in itself is not buying into concern yet. But seasonally speaking, we tend to have a good shot at rallies based on weather, and maybe some sort of a averaging program, daily averaging, where you're pricing a few bushels every day through the middle of July is appropriate to try and capture some of that opportunity if the market, if and when it does take off. The fund composition lends itself that if we do turn, as Dan said, get a reason to turn upward, they can cover a lot of ground in a hurry, and that large short can easily be covered and prop us up for a decent rally. We just have to be prepared for it.
Ellen Dearden, you mentioned the planting pace and that this week probably wouldn't be so important on Monday. However, I suppose it's important to note that last Monday we were within the five-year range on the averages across the Corn Belt for what was planted. And a good portion of that was in the southern third of the Corn Belt where the rain fell. I don't know whether Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska can pick up the rest of that pace and keep us on track or not. What do you think?
I don't expect so. And it looks to me that Iowa planting began toward the end of the week here and into the Dakotas. But really nobody else is able to do any running this week. I often wonder, too, that these numbers that come out on Monday seem to be more Friday numbers than they are Sunday numbers, and yet the data supposedly is as of the Sunday date. So that would be a question I would have. But I don't expect that we're going to see much corn having gone in the ground over this seven-day period, and maybe a few beans, but I think they're going to be located well out of the central Corn Belt.
And you mentioned replant, so why don't you take that up? Where do you think that'll have to happen at this point?
I think that, number one, replant's going to be pretty slow because areas that need replant are still underwater. There's going to be, I'm in the Peoria area, and there will be some areas that'll be replanted, whether they're 2% or 5% or 10%. I don't know at this stage of the game, but the further north and west you go, the less rains came. We at our farm actually got about 6.7 inches of rain, and I don't know what we got yesterday and today on Thursday, but there'll be some replant real close to us, and I think that that's pretty much the case, and it the percentage amount will be much larger as you go further south. You see pictures of southern Illinois, southern Missouri. That stuff's just gone. That's going to be a long time drying out, too.
I made note that Sherman Newland, one of our other analysts, had said that he had 13 inches, I think, of rainfall up to the point about 10:30 or 11 o'clock on this Thursday, the 4th of May, over the last week, if I remember correctly, from his Twitter account. So what are you thinking, Ellen, about farmers at this point? They're stalled in the field. The markets jumped. They dropped again. They've got to be disappointed. Do they really need to be ready to make some sales on the next punch higher when it comes?
I think so. And I would agree with Brian's comment that, you know, dribbling stuff into the market as we turn things higher, and logically that will begin after this mid-May time period. I think you have to be ready, have a plan. And my guess is that you're going to run out of price before you run out of bushels, particularly on the corn side, to do some selling.
What about old crop?
Old crop corn looks pretty much dead in the water just because the amount of bushels that are from the central Corn Belt going west. As you go east, the situation's very different. Look at what the debasis differentials are. The Gulf has a smoking hot bid, but with the Mississippi River closed at St. Louis, nothing can move off the Illinois. Nothing can move off the higher miss. So that's kind of puts a lot of corn in position that where's it going to go? And there's still outside piles of corn everywhere.
Brian Stark, you watched this closely. What's your thought about old crop corn and its availability, its ability to move?
I think the one phrase we've always used in the industry is that bad logistics are never bullish. And I think that's kind of what we've tried to preach to the customer, that when you have river congestion, you see the end user. Basically, what that means is double down. If he can't get his barges down the river, he's going to look at unit trains down to the Gulf, or he's going to need something more in the immediate future. And all that does is kick the can down the road from a basis perspective. So I think we're still in this sell and defend market. I think for the futures to rally on old crop, you're going going to have to rely on some concern on new crop values, but I think it is very appropriate to take advantage of strength in the basis, especially in the eastern Corn Belt where we reside, where there is some opportunity to move grain. And if you don't like the base straight basis contract being long futures, there's always the opportunity to sell the cash and stay long with options as a safer play. So I think there's certainly some opportunity, and the farmer needs to pay attention because there is a lot of old corn, and the end user knows that. And so he's living hand to mouth and strictly buying spot needs. So without the ability to book forward carry, I think the grower needs to be active when he sees a hot basis.
Dan Smicker, technically it's been a pretty volatile week. Have there been any patterns developing in the last 2 weeks in the old or new crop corn that you've been watching?
Well, for the most part, we're sideways. And we've been going to the top end of the range, back down to the bottom of the range. Cyclically, I need another 2 to 3 weeks before I can put my 10-gallon hat on. But I think, you know, we'll see how weather plays out here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But corn could start turning up in the early band of a major cycle low in here. But normally it wouldn't take until maybe June. But I do think once corn turns here, I think we got a bull market all the way into next spring. So, but it's going to take a while for it to do that. We have to kind of clear our April high points. And this week we just kind of went up against them. And then now we've have fallen back, but I think we're in a broad-based sideways market, waiting on a fundamental event to take us higher. And I think once the trend starts, we could be trending higher all the way into next spring. Now that doesn't mean straight up. It could be a slow grind, and it could be a lot of ups and downs in it, but I think we're at the point where we're recording some major cyclical upturns in the market, and I kind of want to be friendly. Once we turn, I think she's going to go a whole lot higher than what everybody thinks she's going to go, but we ain't quite there yet.
Brian Stark, what are you hearing from the Kansas Wheat Tour? It ended earlier today. They had a really good crop. I know we're early in the weather catastrophe that happened there. Do we have an idea? And we'll talk with somebody that's on the Kansas Wheat Tour tomorrow during the closing market report, actually, who helped lead that, to get a better idea. But what do we know about results, if any?
Well, from what I've seen thus far, the tour had found yields at record high for today, 58.9 bushels per acre. But the total Kansas wheat yields were seeing around 46.1, which is up from the five-year average, but below last year's final 57 bushel per acre number. Looking at volume, that would mean that from last year, we were 467 million bushels, but the estimate using this year's yield would be about 282 million. So we're down year over year from what they're seeing today. And obviously, it's very hard to quantify with the record amount of snow, because as they've gone through those areas, it's darn near impossible to get a good gauge. So I guess that's kind of the info we have today. I don't know how much impact that's going to have necessarily in the Chicago wheat market. I think, you know, because of the liquidity that Chicago has at times versus the KC wheat futures market, I think you saw the initial emotional reaction of a big push higher earlier this week in wheat. And I think some of the fact of the classes and the fact this isn't a soft red wheat issue, but more hard red wheat issue, saw wheat self-correct today fairly substantially. So yet to be determined what that means, but we all know the connection between wheat and corn, and I think corn really struggled today simply because of the sell-off in wheat and the broad-based commodity sell-off as well.
Yeah, Ellen Dearden, can you follow up on that just a bit? Because it did seem wheat led corn, and I know the rain was fallen, but it seemed that led the corn higher, and it certainly appeared to drag it lower on Thursday.
Absolutely, it did. We just really started off the day as a dog and just kept on chipping lower, actually made new lows late in the session on Thursday. One thing I'll throw out on the comments on the Kansas Wheat Tour, that I haven't seen any comments coming out from the tour suggesting that there's going to be a lot of grays out. And I think there will be a much larger percentage of grays out, not just in Kansas, but in Oklahoma. Part of that is because the wheat's in poor condition. But the second thing is they have enough moisture to plant another crop. And that's very unusual for that western part of Kansas. So I think we need to keep that in consideration, too. I thought the headlines out of the wheat tour screamed market has to go lower because of the large crop prospects, yield prospects in Kansas. But I think the overall crop size will be even lower than the drop from year over year that the wheat tour saw. That may be a supportive factor on wheat.
Are you of the opinion that there'll be more soybean acres then, even if the Corn Belt actually got planted?
No, not necessarily more soybean acres. There'll be more milo acres in that area. I don't think there'll be that many bean acres. It's too far to processors.
They're too far to the west.
Yeah, far to processors. You have to go to Wichita to a processor from western Kansas.
We haven't talked very much about soybeans yet. Where do we stand in that marketplace, in your opinion, Dan?
Probably like corn, trying to get some traction to go higher, but the visuals are absolutely terrible with larger plantings and a large South American crop. But it's interesting that they won't go down. I mean, at least over the past month or two, with all of this bearishness, they haven't had much success in going down. If anything, they've been kind of wanting to trend a little higher here. I think farmers have more bean sales on the books than probably anything. The market advisory crowd has been pretty big advisors or sellers of $10 beans. The grain companies have did everything that they can to get them to buy into these exotic contracts to sell $10 soybeans plus. So that's the one that's probably going to take off because nobody wants to be bullish beans. Everybody wants to be bearish beans and maybe a little bullish corn. Beans are where all the shorts are at. So the market always goes where the shorts are at or where the stops are at, and the stops are going to be, the buy stops are in the soybean market more so than in the corn market.
I thought it was interesting. The bean spreads definitely don't look bearish. Old crop beans, you've got July and August beans trading at even money. I mean, for a while on Thursday, as watching that spread move, we had an inverse. And, you know, that says to me that our old crop supplies of beans aren't going to be 420 million bushel or whatever USDA says they're going to be. They're probably going to be tighter than that. So a carry-in may be quite a bit smaller than what USDA is going to be telling us on Wednesday. I think the bean market has acted really pretty well, all things considered, because all the bearish fundamentals, the market can't go down and the spreads just don't look bad. So funds have not piled on like they've piled on the short side of wheat to record levels, piled on short corn. But, you know, they're just kind of sitting there ho-hum on the beans. So I can't be too terribly bearish beans, and it sounds so wrong.
Brian Stark, the USDA numbers are due out next Wednesday. This will be the first time the department takes a look at the new crop and has an official set of numbers in the WASDE report. They do have some numbers out prior to that, but they'll give a full balance sheet this time around. But I want to hold off on that for a second. You can talk about it, but that old crop carryout number, we've already surpassed what USDA said we're going to export for the year. Will they change it by very much?
I think the export number can climb some, and it could be offset by a potentially slightly lower crush. I'm with Ellen. I think the carryout can get tighter as we get closer to the end of the season. And part of that is driven based on what I was commenting earlier about bad logistics aren't necessarily bullish. I think the Gulf and the fact that we've had demand a little bit longer than normal. By this time, the majority of your export business has quieted down in the soybean complex and has shifted to South America, but there the South America grower continues to be a tight holder of his beans. And even with all of the Chinese lineup on demand, we continue to see good demand out of the Gulf. And what that means long term is that potentially our old crop carryout can shrink and become maybe sub 400 million. But if we end up with the same type of acreage in a normal crop, we could kick the can down the road. And the demand base that we normally start to see from China, from the export market in the fall, which is our biggest push through February timeframe, might be a little bit smaller because the Brazilian farmer Argentine farmer at some point does sell, and they'll have a cheaper offer and take some of our normal export share in the fall timeframe. So kind of a Robin Peter to pay Paul type of scenario, but I do agree that we could see a smaller carryout heading into September 1.
Do you have a balance sheet for next year, and what kind of carryout does it look like for soybeans?
Well, it depends on what yields, but the balance sheet, I think you could see anywhere from a 500 to as large as 600 million bushel carryout if you start plugging in a 48 bushel national average or higher, even up to 50 bushels. So that we could be a wash in soybeans. And I think that's why, going back to the points of what Dan made, the farmer has done a very good job, and I can agree with this being here at the grain elevator, of selling new crop beans ahead when they were above $10. Maybe even to the tune of 50 to 60% in some extreme examples, not on an overall basis from our draw customers, but I would say the aggressive ones are over half sold on 2017 production. And I think that is the appropriate thing because it clearly had the most bearish composition moving forward. Doesn't mean that won't change, but I think they've done a very good job doing that. And I think if you look forward, for me in general, I think the beans probably have some of the more bearish fundamentals compared to corn at this time.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Dan Zwicker, I'll start with you this afternoon. Your final word for this May 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Is Branstad still governor of Iowa, or have they approved him as ambassador to China yet?
He is still governor of Iowa at this point in the day.
What is going on here? He's been nominated since December, I think. If we can get Terry Branstad over to China, I think we're going to sell a lot of beans to China. We just got to get him confirmed and get him over there, because I think I'm still convinced that China has to narrow the trade balance with the United States. And one way to do that is to buy more U.S. commodities. They don't owe anything to Brazil. They owe everything to the United States. We're the big buyer of their goods, and they need to narrow that trade deficit. And I think China's going to be a much bigger buyer of soybeans in the U.S. than anybody's given them credit for. And so that's my final word, is let's get Terry confirmed as the ambassador to China, and let's get something going in agriculture.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Brian Stark is with the Andersons. Brian?
I think the producer needs to be nimble on his feet and take advantage of setting floors in place and giving him some upside opportunity if and when the market does turn here in the next 30 to 60 days. Seasonally, that's a good time to be looking to make some sales, specifically on corn.
And Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Ellen, if this is not on your list for the final word, can you also put in just a bit on the cattle market for the week?
Okay, it wasn't my final word, but the cattle market has really been a smoking market. On Thursday, we had a huge up day and just a so-so close with only the June and the August closing higher. This has been a cash-led bull market. It looks to me like we're in wave three of a five-wave up move. But I think we are overdue for a big correction. The feeders had a big downside day on Thursday. Everybody's been trying to pick a top, been hedging on the way up. People really discouraged. But I think this market looks really ripe for a sell-off with the Goldman roll. And watch out, because it may be that hogs take over a little upside and let the cattle back down. My final words, watch sugar. I know sugar market isn't on most people's radar, but it looks to me like there's an area that we need to be watching, because Mexico has really threatened turning off the spigot on high fructose corn syrup should the U.S. Put the kibosh on Mexican sugar imports. Brazil's been making ethanol out of sugar, needs that sugar in the domestic market for cooking, etc. And so sugar's really going to be an important commodity to watch insofar as it's got some good relationships, strong relationships with corn.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at WILLAG.org. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at Commodity Week. Our panelists this week have included Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.